Hello, folks, and welcome to another edition of the Business for Good podcast with me, Jerry Lyons. I'm delighted today to introduce Kasia from Babbinswood Farm in Oswestry Street in Shropshire to the show. Kasia and her family run a certified organic farm and have a really clear ethos around what good farming looks like. They farm in a way that benefits the well-being of their community and our planet. And during my research into what Kasia and her team do, one thing that really struck me was, I really want to use this business. I was reading about them and the stuff they do for the community and for the planet and the detail they go into to making sure they do the right thing. And I thought, I just want to get up there to Shropshire and spend some time at their farm, doing their activities and using their farm shop. I think during this conversation, you'll see that they do everything as organically as possible, but they also do it as authentically as possible as well. They have a really interesting story to tell, and I'm sure you'll enjoy the next 30 minutes of our conversation with Kasia. Delighted today to introduce Kasia Bowles Jones to the show. Kasia and her family run Babbinswood Farm in Shropshire. It's a wonderful, wonderfully ethical, sustainable, you name it. These people are trying to do the right thing by their community and the planet. I'm really impressed with how they tell their story as well. And I'm looking forward to the next sort of 30 minutes chatting with Kasia. So first of all, Kasia, I'll ask a question. How are you this morning?
I'm very well, thank you, Jerry.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the farm and your ethos and your background, please?
Sure, yeah. So we're in Shropshire, and the farm's been in my family for over five generations, and very lucky to have grown up on the farm as a child and an experience sort of living the good life. My family decided, unfortunately, to come out of farming in 2001. Dad stopped milking cows, and the money was he was at a point in his life where he has to either invest loads of money and go big and probably compromise on some of the things that he thinks is good in farming, or just get out of farming, like many small farmers did at the time, and he sadly decided to stop. But actually, you know, I think, as the, you know, it was for the best at the time. So the farm has, we've not been farming the farm as a family until 2017. I went off and studied geology at uni. I pursued a career in outdoor education, teaching, working with vulnerable young adults, and kind of came back to the farm in 2016-17, where I sort of was really kind of wanting to understand the why is there such a disconnect between people and their food, because I was having many conversations with people as I was sort of in that education sector, and people just, you know, don't know where their food comes from or how it's produced and where it's produced, and I, you know, at the time my parents were sort of saying, what are me and my two sisters, what are we doing with the farm, you know, are we gonna make something of it, or shall we sort of let it go and see if another family can try? And, you know, and me at the time, me and my husband were really passionate about sort of going, well, if we can produce good, nutritious food in a sustainable and ethical way, that for the planet, for the community, but also for the animals on the farm, then, you know, let's try. So we did. We tried, that's what we're doing. We're 5 years in, and it's been really organic in its growth, and we're looking forward to what the future holds.
And there you said about like the growth being organic as well, but I saw a great phrase on your website about working with nature. Now, I think as humans, there's a tendency with some of us to sort of work against nature and try to sort of tame it and make it do exactly what we want it to do. I know you're certified organic as well. What sort of things do you guys do to work with nature? I know you don't plow, is that correct?
Yeah, we don't plough. We've got, we're a livestock farm, so we rear beef and sheep and dairy, and we make sure they've got a sort of a 100% pasture-based diet. So they eat basically what grows on the farm. And they do that the way we manage their grazing, so how they eat the ground that's on the farm, is that they move around the farm, and the grass is constantly sort of there for them to eat, and we make sure that they don't disturb that. So yeah, we don't plow, we don't reseed the pastures for new crops, or new grass types of grasses for the cows, because it because we just want to regenerate the system and allow what the natural seeds are in the soil already, that have been there for sort of the last sort of 50 to 100 years, that adapted to our soil type. We want them to flourish. Yeah. So we find that, you know, there's lots of research out there now that suggests that that plowing is not good for the soil. It destroys the soil structure. The soil structure is the sort of the place where the biology in the soil exists, where the water's contained, where the humus and the organic matter is stored, and to be as effective as possible, it needs to be undisturbed. It needs to be left alone to sort of for nature to do its thing. And when it's working efficiently and effectively, the soil is a fantastic place to store carbon, and that's kind of what we're trying to do on the farm. By the way we work our animals around the farm is to sort of maximize that potential to sequester carbon and keep it in the soil locked down, rather than turning the soil over, which plowing does, and then releasing it back into the atmosphere.
Fantastic. And would you say, are you in the minority of farms in the UK that have this approach?
Yeah, definitely. It's a small population of us that do regenerative agriculture, or call it, you know, I think it's easy to just sort of coin a phrase and then run with it. There's a growing number of organic farmers in the UK. Now, to be an organic farmer, to be certified an organic farmer, you have to go through, you have to meet certain standards, high standards of, sort of soil health care. And one of those is that they don't use any artificial fertilizers. We don't use any artificial pesticides or any chemicals, insecticides on the farm. So being certified organic, that's kind of our baseline. We definitely don't do that. But why I say we're going one step further than that is because we are a livestock farm, so that does mean we've got the advantage of we don't need to sow seeds every year to grow crops. We are producing beef, beef, lamb, and dairy, and the cows just eat the pasture that we have, and so we're not having to sort of put fresh seeds in every year like some arable farmers are having to do, or other livestock farmers might choose a different diet for their animals. So we could keep that soil covered all year round, and that is what we believe is the best way to protect it, to allow the structure to sort of be as protected as possible, the biology in the soil to sort of be can grow as successfully as possible. So that type of farming, the sort of no-till farming or sort of zero plow farming, is the sort of an even smaller number of us, but it is getting more attention. So I hope that it will be a growing there's lots of techniques coming in now where even arable farmers can use techniques such as no-till and using cover crops, which means that whilst they've got their new seeds coming up, they've got the soils covered with a different sort of fast-growing variety of crop that's beneficial to the life in the soil. So there's lots of good stuff happening in the industry. I'm definitely not a expert at all in like arable farming, there's challenges there, but people are they're excited for the change and trying something new.
Do you think as well it's being driven by consumers? Because I think I know in our house we're a lot more savvy about, especially my wife, about where food is coming from and livestock welfare and stuff like this. So do you notice a demand being driven by people?
I think there's a lot of talk about it. You know, there's definitely, you know, people, you know, conversations I have, people are more, they do question where their food comes from. Now I might be speaking to the converted because I sell direct to my customers through the farm shop, so they're coming to me anyway. We want, as the community business that we're creating at the moment, what we want to do is get access to a much wider population, a much wider sort of demographic of our community, and then ask that question and ask what the barriers are to being able to sort of access food that's produced in this way. Because, you know, the Sustainable Food Trust have done fantastic research, and, you know, they do say that, you know, every pound you spend on your food, wherever that may be, that's the food system you're voting for. If you don't want that food system, don't buy into it. Not everyone has that luxury, I understand.
Yeah, very interesting. It's interesting that your purchase is a sort of a vote for what you believe in to a certain degree. And I get that some people, it's cheaper to buy cheaper food.
Yeah.
So if you guys weren't so driven with your ethos about doing right by the planet and sustainability and the welfare of the animals, could you produce what you produce a lot cheaper?
Yeah, absolutely. There's, you know, unfortunately, food market is a commodity market now. You know, milk is produced in vast quantities from ever decreasing number of cows. Some people believe that's brilliant because it's more efficient, and some people will argue it's not natural and it's not the sort of best for the life of that animal. Every farmer is different, and every farmer will believe they're doing the best that they can in with the resources and the decisions they make. I don't want to judge anybody. Yeah. I'm not, you know, I just have chosen to come back to my family farm, and for me, the animal welfare aspect of the food production is one of my very, very high priorities. And not only the animals that I'm lucky enough to farm with, my dairy cows, the sheep and the beef animals, but also the wildlife on the farm as well. You know, so the wild animals that exist to help my system be more resilient, to help my system be more robust. That we're also looking after them as well. So it's, yeah, and some of those you can't see, and that's the life in the soil. You know, you can't see that, but it's there, and it's doing a fantastic job at providing nutrients to my animals, which they eat, and then you know, from there, what they produce, we eat that, and it's therefore nutritious. What we're doing on the farm is, it is small scale, and a lot of people will argue it can't feed the world, but we've been growing the farm from, you know, I started with one cow 5 years ago, and I've now got 40 cows and 40 sheep. It's a slow growing process. Wow. I chose not to borrow loads of money and invest it because I wasn't sure if it would work. I didn't want that risk.
It's always the risk.
I also didn't want to be beholden to someone that was lending me money, and then I might have to compromise on my values. So, you know, but it has grown organically in the business sense, but as well as, you know, the farming sense. And with that, I've earned customer trust and loyalty, because they really do trust where their food comes from when they buy it from the farm.
It's a great point you made there about, you know, like when you get outside investment coming into a business, it can water down what you want to achieve in terms of the values and your ethos. So I think you made a very smart move there to grow the business organically, because you don't have people telling you, well, you know, we've got to get a return on this money. So kudos to you for that. Another thing that I thought you do wonderfully well, it's not just farming and the livestock and the agriculture, but you have things that like your volunteer Tuesdays that you do for your community. So could you tell us a bit more about that, Kasia, about your community involvement, please?
Absolutely. So so one of the things that we've done, we've started since lockdown really, is develop our sort of community relationship. That might be on farm community, or it might be the wider community that are around the farm, sort of living in local villages and towns. Because we know to be a resilient farm, you know, as well as having good food to produce, we also need the support from our local community to sort of to buy it and support us in that sense as well. So we thought we want to get people involved in the farm. We've got a fantastic small no-dig market garden. It's definitely got less risk with it when it comes to having volunteers on the farm when working with livestock. But whilst people are here, they come every Tuesday and they get involved in sowing seeds or preparing beds with compost, planting out plants. And, you know, we can all talk and have a conversation about food production or whatever it might be. And it's just having that that conversation is what really helps people sort of understand, all right, okay, this is what we're all about here, and really just find out that we do believe we're authentic in what we say, and we do see things through to the nth degree, and hopefully people, by being open and transparent with people, they can understand that.
It's such a great idea, but please tell us more, because I love this idea about people being able to come, get their hands dirty, do you know, in the nicest sense of the word, you know, and learn at the same time. So
absolutely.
So what sort of, how many sort of people do you get? What impact does it have on them? Because obviously lockdown was hard for all of our sort of mental health. Mm. And I know from my own and friends and family, just being outside and doing something like gardening or in your case, farming is so beneficial. So what sort of responses are you seeing from people that are attending, Kasia?
I mean, they just love the farm. They fall in love with the place. They just being outside, literally sort of getting their hands in the dirt and planting baby plants and watching them grow over the course of the summer. It's something that people aren't fortunate enough to sort of have in their daily lives now. And it's something that is so important. To be able to sort of, there's something really human about it, you know, about being able to sort of produce food, grow food, be involved in that food production, but in a safe environment. You know, we don't use any chemicals, we don't have any big machinery. It's all very the market garden's all very people based, people powered, and that's kind of the way we want it to stay. We also do a lot of permaculture in the garden, which is basically having the way we sort of design the garden, it's all about design. It's really so we have like planting regimes that are beneficial to each other. So, you know, we might grow different crops together, which would help reduce pest burden, but also promote nutrient sharing amongst the plants. So they're really good, like vigorous, you know, they have vigorous growth and good sort of fruits. So yeah, we do a lot, and we have fantastic, we have long-term volunteers at the farm as well from the organization, which is sort of acronymed WOOFERS. They're basically all people who travel the world wanting to work on organic farms, and you know, throughout the year we have those. And you know, we've had to make it's safe during COVID, so you know, we kind of were learned from the first lockdown, you know, we couldn't have any volunteers then, and then we got confident in being able to get volunteers, but having sort of temporary accommodation on the farm for them to be here and be safe. And you know, it was nervous sort of being responsible for a lot of people in this very sort of turbulent time when we don't know what's going on. And but you know, the benefit that people got from just being able to sort of be outside, talk to the growers here, talk to me, see the cows. You know, usually when they arrive, I'm putting the cows back in the field after milking, and they see the little calves trotting up with their mums. You know, it's something that it's not done any. You know, there is a disconnect that needs to be re-established.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's a phrase you've got on your website, working with nature.
Yeah.
And I think that too often you see businesses or agricultural businesses or businesses just in general, or people in general, they try and work against nature and make it bend its, you know, to what we want out of it in a sort of unnatural kind of way. Mm. So that working with nature approach sounds absolutely brilliant. These woofers, are they called?
Yeah, that's right.
This has got me intrigued, because did they come from all around the world, or did they before lockdown?
They did, yeah. So it's like they basically help. They stay on the farm. They work 5 hours a day, 5 days a week for food and accommodation, basically. And you know, we've had volunteers on the farm from that organisation since 2012. So we're really used to, you know, accommodating them. Yeah. And throughout that whole period of time, we've had so many people with so much knowledge and giving their input into how the farm works as well. I mean, at the moment, we've got two ecologists here, Sam and Tom, and they are really growing my understanding and knowledge in terms of the wilder aspects on the farm. For example, this year, we're trialling wildlife strips. So the way I graze the cows across the farm is they have small paddocks. They eat the grass. I put them in the sort of the right size for the day to ensure that they have enough for their food. They leave grass, so it's undisturbed and it's able to grow, go to seed and replenish the seed bank. But they also trample a third, and that trampling is they're putting the grass in contact with the earth's surface, so it's providing a mulch, it's providing cover, protection for the soil life, but also food for the soil as well. So that's kind of how I plan the grazing. And Tom was talking, he's like, well, what about leaving a wildlife strip, so a completely undisturbed area between these paddocks, so that if there are any small mammals or you know, bugs that don't want to be encroached in where the animals are grazing, you know, could give them a bit of a corridor of safety. So we've been doing that this year as well, leaving not huge amounts of area, sort of 2 meter strips. And actually, you know, we've only started it since this March, so it's very new, and we'll observe any effects that it may have had. But it opening my eyes to things. Because we've got predators on the farm, we've got buzzards and kestrels and owls, and by, you know, sometimes grazing a field just sort of close to the soil surface, which happens a lot in farming, means that all the small mammals have nowhere to go, because they're completely all, you know, they're their cover's blown, basically, so they can't move around the area, and they're just sort of picked out by the bigger predators. So by providing that longer cover is hopefully giving them a habitat of safety. It's all quite experimental, but but because we're quite flexible in how we graze the animals, we can accommodate that.
And you obviously you put a great amount of thought into the farming side of the business and the agricultural side of the business. Have you got the same sort of focus on your, do you have a business plan, a marketing plan for the farm, or is it, again, more organic, you sort of do it as ideas come, or is there some grand plan for the farm?
So we do have in 2016, myself and Mum, and I must mention, I can't believe I haven't mentioned it before now, Mum is my inspiration behind what we're doing at the farm. She's heavily involved, although she's a full-time vet, she is also, you know, very integrated into how, you know, how the farm is taken forward, and, you know, the climate emergency is something that, you know, like a lot of people, keeps her up at night. And, you know, and even though to some we're doing a lot, to her we're not doing enough. You know, we could always be doing more to mitigate climate change. Or, you know, now she kind of did this course with me in 2016, which is called Holistic Management. So it's like a framework in which we run our farm by, and it's so our basically we have a context, and that's basically to regenerate the soil, so the farm is in a thriving state to hand down to the next generation, but also be a beacon of hope and light to other people. That's kind of what we do, and that's what we want to.
It's fascinating that, because nearly every guest that I get on the show says something about that. It always gets around to the subject of what they're doing in totally different industries, like property and cosmetics and all this, but they all hope to inspire either other people or the next generation. So you like what you're saying there fits into this pattern that's developing amongst all the guests, that you've got a bigger picture than just your business. It's about the big picture.
Fantastic. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, like they say, you know, the best time to plant a tree, you know, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The next best time is tomorrow. You know, we don't plant trees for us. We've planted 8,000 trees on the farm this year. I didn't plant them for me. I've planted them.
8,000?
Yeah, 8,000, yeah.
Great.
I didn't plant them for me. I planted them for my son. Mum did it for her grandson. You know, we've done it for the next generation.
Yeah.
So definitely, you know, farming is long-term thinking. Sadly, because of the commodity-driven market that farming's become involved in, it's short-term thinking all the time. It's the next crop, it's the next yield, it's the next sort of carving. It's not, you're not thinking tens of years down the line, which is where I think we've gone wrong, really.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that short-term thinking, just even in other businesses or organizations, it's never the right way. Yeah. It's never the right way. I think the good organizations, good businesses are thinking way ahead. I did actually forget to mention as well, because Paul, who I've been liaising with to arrange the chat with you, he tells me that you've been recently become a finalist for the Soil Farmer of the Year award. So congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, I could blame my sister for nominating me for that.
it's all good. And obviously you're doing things in the right way. So it's always good to see people get recognized, especially when they're doing things right.
Yeah.
So I'm conscious of your time. So I've only got a couple more sort of questions that we ask pretty much every guest. One is simply what are your plans for the future? Where do you see Babinswood headed in the years to come?
So just going back to what we're creating at the moment, we're creating a not-for-profit business on the farm. That element of the farm is purely retail events and experiences. So basically I've kind of over the last sort of 5 years, I've realized that to do what I do really, really well, I have to focus on it. Okay. So I want to sequester, I'm a soil farmer. That's what I call myself. I have animals because they're the best way of sequestering carbon. The byproduct is fantastic. I get meat, I get milk, I get wool, I get hide, but ultimately they are here whilst they're with me. They have the highest of standards of living, and then, you know, but they're sequestering carbon for me. I need to focus on that. I need to do that really well to make it happen the best it can do. But I also have a product that needs to be sold. I need to, you know, I need to generate an income. So we've developed this not-for-profit, which is basically the farm shop, an online shop and a delivery service, which is the sort of the front of house of the farm. It's where, so I can sell my produce through that, as well as, but not have to worry about myself, the marketing and the sort of the customer interaction in terms of sales and accounts and all that sort of stuff. So I can really just focus on being a farmer, but I'm right on the farm. So customers don't have to worry that, you know, that they're going to become lost behind a smoking mirror. I'm here. You know, we'll do sort of producer weekends where they can meet the farmer. But what it's really, that the business, what it's really going to help us do is get more people to our farm. Livestock farming is a part of the farm.
Yeah.
We've also got we've got growers, vegetable growers that want to join us. So they'll be able to do their thing really well, but then be able to sell their stuff through this not-for-profit business. And actually we can have people that are running the business, that are Paul, who's one of them, and the lady Lisa, who are passionate about getting our story out there. They are good at sort of the sales side of things, the social media and all of that sort of things. They, you know, they can do that bit really well because that's what they're good at. You know, and so everyone's got their own sort of passion and they can focus on it. So it would be great to be able to, you know, Babbins Wood only so big, it's very big, but you know, it's only going to feed so many people. Mm-hmm. If we can feed 100 families around our farm, I'd be really proud of that with a varied diet. But there's lots of other small farms and other farms in the UK that need help. They need help to, one, reconnect with their community, and two, produce really good nutritious food whilst providing a space with wildlife and to protect the soil. So if we can create this sort of model whereby, you know, there is the farming, the producers, but also the retail, then hopefully it can be replicated.
It's great because it shows your sort of mindset there is realistic, because sometimes I see it with businesses that are coming in from an ethical angle. They've got all the right intentions in the world, but they kind of forget that to survive, you still need to make money. Yeah. You know, and it sounds like you've got that. And if you can, like you say, create that model, that would be fantastic, because you'll be able to go. It's almost like in a crude way, like a franchise, to sort of go, right, this is how we did it.
Yeah.
Here's the steps we did. You guys can do it too, but your franchise isn't the type like a McDonald's or a Pizza Hut or rubbish like that, but something that's going to benefit people, the planet, the wildlife. So it's absolutely fantastic. So I love that. I love that. Final question, Kasia. What does a business that does good and performs well look like to you?
So I think we work to the three pillars. So we've got it that does good. It does good for the environment. That includes the soil. It does good for the community and the people, and not only the farmers, me, myself, my family, but also the people that are on the receiving end of the product. But it also has to be financially sustainable. We don't live lavish lives. You know, I live in a beautiful farm. But we do, you know, we're lucky to have access to good food, which I want to get more. I want to get that luxury not to be a luxury anymore. Everyone should have access to good food, and you know, it should be that the people that are producing the processed food, the highly sort of the food that's been, you know, sort of produced in the worst possible way, that it should be properly accounted for and properly, you know, properly labeled, and that sort of the food that's produced naturally and you know, organically, it shouldn't need to be labeled in such a way. It should just be that our food's really good, but the other food has got this and this in, and it's produced with chemicals, it's produced in a big factory, unfortunately, as organic farmers, natural farmers, we're always having to justify why we are good and natural and healthy and nutritious, whereas the big guys that are producing the fizzy drinks, the chocolate bars, the, you know, that can just sit on the shelf and not need to be questioned almost.
It's so true when you think about it like that, because, you know, like it would be great if organic farming was the norm, and the explanations had to be made by the people that produce super refined foods in factories. It's almost like, you know, what might be good content for you guys is, obviously with my marketing head on, you can see lots of good videos coming out of what you guys are doing. You know, video content, which is the total opposite of what a factory can do. Nobody would want to see somebody saying, oh, right, and this is your ready meal. This is the chemicals being poured into your ready meal mix. Exactly. And then it goes into this big cauldron. You know, it tells a terrible story at that. But no, I think that's a really, really good approach and good advice. That's a really good answer about what good businesses look like, because it's realistic as well. But Kasia, thank you for your time and for coming on. And like I said, when I take the family out to to Wales, we'll be definitely stopping by and saying hello to you guys.
Fantastic. That would be lovely to see you, Jerry.
Great stuff. Cheers, Kasia.
Thank you.
Thanks for your time.
Bye.